Chapter 20. Chloe struck out in her efforts to determine who had put the phony employee document in her box. She had begun to interview Yekaterina's co-workers, but after a half-dozen painful conversations, she realized her investigation was doing more harm than good. In nearly a century, she hadn't had to deal with any problem more serious than hurt feelings between employees. With Jesus on the world's throne and King David, the Lord's prince, ruling Israel from the temple, all matters of law and judgment seemed to go smoothly and quickly. She called in Maddie Cleveland and suggested they just chalk up the crisis, such as it was, to an ill-conceived prank and let it die. "It hasn't caused too much controversy within your staff, has it?" Maddie shrugged. "Actually, it has. Everyone is talking about it, pointing fingers, the whole bit. I would have loved to have been able to say we found the culprit, dealt with him or her, got an apology and moved on. But this is all right, too." "You can blame it on me, Maddie. Tell the staff I decided it wasn't worth pursuing." "Whatever you say, Chloe. I agree we need to get on with what we're here for. I will say this. Kasim has been particularly solicitous ever since this started getting around." "The one who's been so annoying to Yekaterina?" "He's really cleaned up his act. He leaves her alone, and he's been much more helpful to me lately. Kasim has even commiserated with me over this mess. But I didn't even interview him. What does he know about it?" "Just what everyone else is saying, I guess. He made the effort to set an appointment with me, counseled me not to take it personally, and reminded me how much esteem he and the rest of the staff had for me. It was really sweet." Chloe nodded. "A little out of character?" Maddie cocked her head. "But still sweet. I'd give him the benefit of the doubt." The day finally arrived when Abdullah knew it was time to act. He told Yasmin he was venturing out to the Other Light's secret headquarters and asked that she pray fervently for him while he was gone.
"I will, and I shall not worry," she said, "because you represent the Most High God."
"True," he said. "But I also want to assure you that I will not be revealing to them that my ministry partner is also here in Amman, or giving them any hint as to where I live."
"That is wise. But neither do I fear mere human children, especially those who have chosen to remain outside the kingdom."
Kenny begged off from lunch with Yekaterina to meet briefly with Raimi. He told her he would reconnect with her at the end of the day. Raimi joined him at the far end of the mess hall where they could talk privately.
"Just a few items," Kenny said. "I want to know where things stand with Kasim. I want to know what you think I should do about the persistence of the Jospins, and we need to talk about Yekaterina."
Raimi, whom Kenny had always found both wise and decisive, didn't disappoint. "I don't know what Kasim is telling anyone else, but I have totally distanced myself and the Millennium Force from him. I told him he has no standing with us and that regardless what he chooses to do in relation to the Other Light, we don't want so much as a report from him, not even a second-hand report through Zaki."
"He's okay with that?"
"Of course not. He was angry, which showed me his true colors. And Zaki isn't happy either. I had to tell him that he would be next if he couldn't see the wisdom of our totally parting ways with Kasim. I fear offending Bahira if I did that, but she has never trusted Kasim, and I suppose, you know, we have a sort of mutual admiration society." Kenny smiled. "Kat and I have speculated on what might have become of you two, as a couple, I mean, if you were naturals." Raimi shook his head and looked away. "I have wondered the same, as has she. We can talk about it openly because it's so far from the realm of possibility. It's strange that we admire and respect and truly love each other so deeply, and yet the idea of romance never enters the picture. We're simply not wired that way anymore. That allows us to spend a lot of time together, really as brother and sister, worshipping, praying, studying, planning. I can't tell you how rewarding it is. And I can't tell you how much fun it is to have someone like that in my life," Kenny said, "plus adding the romance to it.
I'm happy for you, I really am. I can tell, thanks. Let's save Tall for last, then, and tell me or ask me whatever it was you wanted to about Yekaterina. Kenny wiped his mouth and shifted in his seat. Well, it's just that our relationship really seems to be headed somewhere. Obviously, she's not my wife yet. She's not even my fiancé. But that is certainly in our future. There's little I don't tell her, Raimi, and very little I want to keep from her. I'm not asking that she be made a member of the Force just yet, but I need you to know that I seek her wisdom and counsel about a lot of the stuff we talk about. Raimi slid his plate aside and leaned on the table. I guess I can't tell you not to do that. I'd be careful, though. You know, relationships don't always end up the way we expect. What happens if a year from now you're just friends or acquaintances? I can't imagine it, but I see what you're saying. Still, this pressure from Ignaz and now Lothair, too, in essence, put up or shut up weighs too heavily on me not to talk about it to the woman I love. She'd be able to tell something was on my mind anyway, and it's not fair to her to keep it from her. And I gather that you haven't kept it from her, I mean. No, I haven't. And what is she saying? Kat thinks I should pursue it, do it right, and, unlike Kasim, act under the authority of the Force. In other words, make sure everybody knows what I'm doing is so they can pray for me, keep track of me, and give advice. Raimi sat back and folded his arms. I like this girl more all the time. Maybe she will make a good Force member someday. Do we need a meeting? Of the Force? Sure, if you plan to respond to these guys. What are you thinking? That you would visit them in France? That, or start feeding them bogus information, just enough to keep them on the string. I don't know, Raimi said, sighing. If our goal is not to win them over, what is it? To keep undecideds from being swayed by them. And how does misleading Tall accomplish that? They rose to start heading back to work. Kenny said, All I know is that if I don't start playing their game soon, they're going to know I'm not on their side. Maybe that's not all bad. I can stick to what I know and what I believe I'm supposed to be doing, reaching the children right here. Abdullah knew he needn't be, but he was nervous. He had allowed his beard to grow out, then trimmed it neatly before luxuriating in a long shower. Now he slowly dressed, eschewing the white robe he had worn for years in Israel and opting for more traditional Jordanian civilian wear. He pulled a blousy white top over billowing beige pants, slipped into open sandals, and carefully wrapped a pure white turban around his head. Yasmin raised her eyebrows when he emerged from the bathroom. "What is the expression?" she said. "All dressed up and nowhere to go?" Except today I have somewhere to go, and I couldn't be more excited. Where is my Bible? You're going to show up on their doorstep with the scriptures in your hand, she said. No subtlety whatsoever? No easing into this? I am going with the confidence of my Redeemer. I am nervous, but unafraid. I suspect I will be on edge until your return, Yasmin said. But I too believe that if you're following the leading of the Lord, he will abundantly bless you. Cameron was tooling around the cot acreage in a golf cart, checking on everything and everybody, when he noticed a man standing near one of the entrances, hands folded in front of him. Cameron slid to a stop and gazed at him from perhaps 100 yards away. The man was dressed as a priest, and as soon as he noticed Cameron, he discreetly raised a hand. It looked like Yerrick. The priest had either walked the more than 18 miles from the temple, or had somehow been supernaturally translated here. Either way, Cameron felt it would be inappropriate to go skidding up to him in the cart. He parked and walked, hoping all the way that the man brought news of another special visit. Yerrick embraced Cameron. "Brother Williams," he said, "I bring you greetings in the name of the Messiah and of his Prince. The Lord bless you in your worthy work of his kingdom." "Thank you, sir. May I offer you anything?" No, thank you. Just a question. Are you able to accommodate Joshua and Caleb on the morrow? Of course. Any idea when? Yerrick smiled apologetically. They will come when they will come. Same instructions as last time. No festivities, no introduction. And we will never be given more advance knowledge, will we? No, it is likely you will not. I will inform the staff, and I will pass along your acceptance. Yerrick turned away with a shy wave, and as Cameron watched, the man seemed to fade into the horizon after treading several steps toward the highway of holiness. Never a dull moment. Abdullah felt strangely conspicuous striding about Amman under the blazing sun in gleaming clothes. Almost everyone he saw was wearing the customary white robe, and his getup elicited double takes and stares, but, probably because he was carrying his Bible, always followed by smiles, which he returned. The closer he got to the address in question, the more excited he grew. Abdullah peeked at the tiny slip of paper to be sure he was in the right neighborhood, and soon he arrived at a square, three-story building topped by towering antennas and satellite dishes. Inside, he found a list of offices that included agricultural consultants, hydrologists, computer specialists, and communications experts. Ah, there it was. A downstairs suite was labeled Theological Training Institute. He took the steps. As soon as Cameron had told Chloe, news of the next day's visitors swept Kot. Staffers immediately adjusted their plans and schedules. They dug out everything they could find on Joshua and Caleb, and within a couple of hours, the kids knew the stories and were acting out the adventures, building models of collapsible city walls, memorizing verses, and singing Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho. And just like last time, Cameron knew the news had reached parents and everyone else in the surrounding communities. Kenny ducked into the communications center and emailed Lothair Jospin. Interesting things in store. May be able to visit you. Big doings here at Kot tomorrow, so may be unreachable. Back to you soon. On his way back to his post, Kenny ran into Kasim Marid, who pulled him off to the side and whispered, "You keeping in touch with Paris? They're getting antsy." "Just did. I'll keep them warm. I suppose you heard about tomorrow." "Who hasn't?" Kasim said. "Can you believe I'm going to have to miss it again? I can't believe it myself." "You don't want to do that. Change your plans. What's more important than this?" "Nah, I can't. Wish I could." "Tell me all about it, huh? I made a commitment and I have to follow through. I sure hope there are more of these. I'll make the next one for sure." Chapter 21 Downstairs, Abdullah found several glassed-in suites with smiling staff moving about. The area for the Theological Training Institute, however, bore nothing transparent. Where the windows should have been were solid walls and a thick wood door. TTI had been painted on it in huge block letters, but it was locked and there was no buzzer. A closed-circuit TV camera had been affixed above it, suspended from the ceiling. Its light glowed red. Abdullah peered about, hesitant to knock. A woman from the next office smiled and beckoned him. He pulled open the glass door to her suite. "May I help you?" she said. He brandished his Bible and said, "I'm looking for the Theological Training Institute people." "Oh, the Lord bless your heart," she said. "And yours," Abdullah said. "Do they hold regular classes or..." "Oh, no, sir. The only people I've ever seen go in or out of there are the two little guys who run it, I guess."
"Little guys?"
"Well, one's littler than the other, 'cause the one's kind of pudgy, you know."
"No, I don't know. Do you know their names or whether they're present?"
"I just knock, hon. Their other visitors knock."
"But I thought you said they were the only..."
"Oh, well, yeah, other than the ones who wear the same kind of clothes."
"Clothes?"
"They don't wear the robes of the righteous, if you know what I mean. I'm convinced they're all naturals and they wear, what do you call them, she snapped her fingers. Army fatigue things. Just like Mudaur and Sarsour. Mudaur? You were asking their names. That's their names. Mudaur is the chubby one, and Sarsour is the skinny little guy. Well, I mean, they're both short, but you can sure tell them apart. I'll knock. Chloe, you're as excited as anyone, Cameron said. Of course, she said. What could be better? You know, when I first heard these Old Testament stories, I was a child and loved Sunday school. It wasn't until I got to be a rebellious teenager that I started resenting having to go and fighting with my mother about it all the time. Even when I pulled away from the church and from God, I still enjoyed the memories of those stories. I came to wonder and then to doubt whether they were true, but I couldn't argue that they were great, and I never forgot them. There are still times when I regret how much God had to do to bring me to him, but then he reminds me that he had pursued me the whole time. I didn't want to die, didn't want to leave you and Kenny, but to be with Jesus was, as Paul wrote, far better. This is just icing on the cake. You and I are given this incredible ministry, and now the miraculous stories are brought to life right before our eyes. So you'll not be taking the day off tomorrow? Chloe smiled and shook her head. Cam, sometimes I wonder if heaven changed your mind at all. Abdullah wandered back out into the hall and studied the big wood door again. As he glanced about, he became aware of the quiet whine of the TV camera and smiled into it as it seemed to focus on him. He held his Bible up in one hand and opened the palm of the other as if asking what he should do next. The camera stopped moving even when Abdullah moved. He knocked politely. Nothing. He rapped loudly from inside. May I help you? If you are the Theological Training Institute, you may. He listened for any movement inside, and finally the door was laboriously unlocked, it sounded as if in more than one place, and, like the woman had described, a skinny little man in ancient Jordanian army fatigues poked his nose out. No classes today. Just open the door, Sarsour, Abdullah said with authority. What do you want? I want to talk with you and Mudaur. He's not here. Then I'll talk with you. Open up. The short, dark man made a face and let go of the door. Abdullah swung it wide and entered a cluttered, claustrophobic space that clearly contained no classrooms. All he saw were three tiny rooms with a few chairs and desks and computers and phones. Papers and books were piled everywhere. Mudaur! The authorities are here again. I thought you said Mudaur was not here. Ooh, my mistake. You caught me in a lie. Whatever will become of me now? So you are not a man of the truth, Abdullah said. Clearly you are a natural. I am indeed. But you are not a believer, despite what it says on the door. What, you're really here for theological classes? None are scheduled currently. Another lie, this time of omission. You never teach theology, do you? In a manner of speaking, sometimes we do, actually. Anti-theology would be more accurate. Mudaur appeared, also living up to his billing. He was fairer-skinned than Sarsour, the same limited height, but heavy and oily. Abdullah had the urge to pull out a handkerchief and wipe the man's face. This is getting old and boring, Mudaur said. We have been dragged before the judges before, even threatened to be deported to Israel for an audience with one of the apostles. We pled for the freedom to exercise our own free will and pledged to lie low. Have we not been lying low enough, or have your superiors not kept you up to date on our file? My superior is the Lord Christ himself. Well, aren't we important? No, but he is. I come not to arrest or even detain you. I have come to offer my services. A smile played at Mudaur's lips, and he pointed to a chair, nodding at Sarsour to clear it of a stack of papers. Abdullah sat, and the fat man settled in across from him.
"Your services," Mudawar said. "I am a chaplain. I minister the word of God to people's hearts. I teach, I counsel, I pray, I advise. And you are offering your services to our theological training institute?"
"No, sir. I am offering them to this cell chapter of the Other Light."
"Ah, I see. So there is no pretense here. You aren't pretending to not know who we are, and neither are you trying to represent yourself as someone other than who you are."
"Why would I do that? A man my age could never effectively infiltrate your organization, could he?"
Mudawar seemed to study him, squinting. He shook his head.
"No, he couldn't. Now tell me, I didn't catch your name.
Abdullah Ababne. Tell me, Khoury Ababne, what value would your services be to us?"
"That would be up to you, and you may refer to me as Mr. Ababne, or even by my given name."
"Oh, what an honor. I respectfully decline your offer, thank you for dropping in on us, and wish you a good day."
"You will not be providing me office space, then."
"I beg your pardon."
"I see that you're crowded, but I also understand that you do not hold religious classes here. Perhaps you could clear a little more clutter and find me a space to, how do we say it, set up shop."
"This has been an amusing interruption, sir, but playtime is over. You may leave now."
"Oh, but I am not leaving. If I'm not provided an office here, I shall be forced to bring a portable table from home and establish myself before your door. Do not, however, expect me to double as your receptionist or inform the curious of your comings and goings."
"What would you be doing out there?"
"Study and read and be available, offering the services I outlined. I will teach, counsel, pray, whatever anyone wants."
Mudawar laughed while his diminutive cohort stared, plainly puzzled. Whether he was confused by Abdullah or by Mudawar's countenancing this affront, Abdullah couldn't tell.
"Well," Mudawar said, standing and thrusting out his hand, "I have already clearly told you we are declining your offer."
Abdullah ignored his hand. He pointed into the corner of the next room.
"I would be perfectly comfortable right there, and I would be handy to you."
"I am losing patience, friend."
"Oh, I like that you call me friend, as you are the enemy of the one I serve. Would you not find it advantageous to have me in the next room the next time you send out a message to your adherents? You could ask whether you have accurately interpreted something you are criticizing from the scriptures, or even from tradition." Color began to rise from Mudawar's neck to his moist face.
"So the big boss has assigned you to torment us, eh?"
"No, actually, to love you."
"To love us? This from the same God who vaporized two earnest, sincere opponents in Egypt just because they didn't get in line with all the other sheep who trekked to Jerusalem for the
Osaze, you mean?"
"You call it what you will. It will always be Egypt to me. And your so-called God of love, is he not the same one who obliterated one of ours who merely deigned to try to make love with one of his glorifieds? This is the same God who slew millions, if the stories of the Old Testament can be believed."
"Mudawar, please sit and let's discuss this."
"There is nothing to discuss."
"Oh, but there is. My first duty as your chaplain is to correct your view of God, especially if you see him as merciless and unloving."
"Well, that's the way I see him."
"Do you have another moment for me, friend, as I would like to make what I consider a most interesting point?"
Mudawar sat heavily and sighed. "One more minute, but don't call me friend."
"Fair enough. though you may feel free to call me that. Here's what I find intriguing. When I was a young man, younger than you, my problem was that I thought all the dire warnings of God's judgment were wrong, because all I had heard about Jesus was that he was kind and loving and a pacifist, turning the other cheek, preaching the golden rule. Then came the end of his patience and mercy. His people were swept off to heaven, and he spent the next 7 years trying to get man's attention and persuade him that God was not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. And now here you are, 100 years later, unable to accept his love. Mudaur slapped his palms on the table, making both Abdullah and Sarsour jump. I should have my head examined, he said. Sarsour, clear the corner of that office. What? You heard me, just do it. This old fool won't be in our way, and who knows, maybe he'll come in handy. I will ask him to defend his God when we have aught against him. He'll just prove that God is indefensible, that there's neither rhyme nor reason to the maddening two sides of his character. Oh, but there is, Abdullah said. He is loving and full of grace, but he is also perfect and just. Yeah, yeah, save it. If you're camping out in here, you'll get plenty of time to spew your platitudes. I've got a newsletter to get out, so you're gonna stay out of my hair for the rest of today. Got it? Certainly. But know that I am willing to proofread that for you and make sure you're on track. I mean, you wouldn't want to be guilty of raging against straw men, would you? Sarsour, get him set up in there and then shut his door. Thank you, friend, Abdullah said, offering his hand. Mudaur gripped it lightly. Yeah, yeah. Chapter 22. Joshua and Caleb arrived at Kot mid-morning the next day, greeting Cameron and striding directly to the spot on the athletic fields where the seemingly endless crowds could see and hear them. Their glorified bodies looked about the same age. Cameron guessed 40. They appeared fit and robust. Cameron whispered to them, "I will, of course, accede to your wishes, but before you begin, the children would like to recite to you in unison what they memorized from the scriptures yesterday. Would that be permissible?" Joshua and Caleb looked at each other and shrugged. "Forgive us," Joshua said, "but you must realize that even after all this time, we remain amazed at what we see in this new world. Life is not at all what it once was, especially in our day." "Especially the children," Caleb said. "But yes, by all means, let us hear from them." Cameron cued the kids, and from thousands of young voices came, "The Lord's anger was aroused on that day, and he swore an oath, saying, 'Surely none of the men who came up from Egypt, from 20 years old and above, shall see the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord.'" "Well, yes, amen and amen," Joshua said, again miraculously able to be heard by all. "Thank you, children. Caleb and I thank you. You are right that the Lord's anger was aroused. He made Israel wander in the wilderness 40 years, until all the generation that had done evil in his sight was gone. You know, many people believe the wilderness journey simply took that long. But from the scriptures you know that the 40 years were a punishment for their lack of faith. If you trace our journey on a map, you'll see that we simply wandered around, getting nowhere. Now believe me, I know the story you want me to get to, and I promise I will tell it. But let me ask Caleb here to take you back to when he and I first met and labored together. It may be hard for you to believe, but we were once children just like you. Now don't laugh, we were." Caleb stepped forward. His voice was reedier than Joshua's, but just as loud and understandable. Joshua and I were born in Egypt, while our parents and all the children of Israel were slaves. Even the adults, our parents and aunts and uncles, were called children because they were the children of God, his chosen people. Joshua and I experienced everything the rest of our tribes went through in the wilderness after escaping. Joshua proved to be a mighty man of valor, serving as a commander in the great war against the Amalekites. He also ministered to our leader Moses when he went up Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments from the Lord. One day the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of your fathers you shall send a man, every one a leader among them." So Moses sent us from the wilderness of Paran according to the command of the Lord, all of us men who were heads of the children of Israel. That included Joshua, who was then known as Hoshea until Moses changed his name, and me. He told us, "Go up this way into the south, and go up to the mountains, and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps or strongholds, whether the land is rich or poor, and whether there are forests there or not. Be of good courage, and bring some of the fruit of the land." I was glad he added that last, because it was the season of the first ripe grapes. So we went up and spied out the land from one end to the other. When we came to the valley of Eshcol, which is not far from Hebron, we cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes so large we had to carry it between two of us on a pole. We also brought some of the pomegranates and figs. We finally returned from spying out the land after 40 days, bringing back word to Moses and his brother Aaron, and all the congregation of the children of Israel, and we showed them the fruit of the land. We told Moses in front of all the others, "The land where you sent us truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong, the cities are fortified and very large." Now I could see that this report troubled the people, and while the report was true, I believed God was in this and wanted us to proceed. I quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." But some of the others who had gone with me said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report, saying, "The land devours its inhabitants, and all the people are of great stature. We saw giants, and we were like grasshoppers compared to them." Now, children, while this may have been an exaggeration, it was close to the truth. Still, I believed we were to trust God for the victory and follow him into the land. But all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, "If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" So they said to one another, "Let us select a leader and return to Egypt." Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. But Joshua and I tore our clothes and spoke to the children of Israel, "The land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." But the people wanted to stone us. Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle before all the children of Israel. The children jumped up and cheered, surprising Caleb and making him look to Joshua, who urged him to continue. The children sat again. Then the Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people reject me? And how long will they not believe me with all the signs which I have performed among them? I will strike them with the pestilence and disinherit them, and I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they." And Moses said to the Lord, "Then the Egyptians will hear it, for by your might you brought these people out from among them, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They have heard that you, Lord, are among these people, that you, Lord, are seen face to face, and your cloud stands above them, and you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and in a pillar of fire by night. Now if you kill these people, then the nations which have heard of your fame will speak, saying, 'Because the Lord was not able to bring this people to the land which he swore to give them, therefore he killed them in the wilderness.'" And Moses continued, "I pray, let the power of my Lord be great, just as you have spoken, saying, 'The Lord is long-suffering and abundant in mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he by no means clears the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation. Pardon the iniquity of this people, I pray, according to the greatness of your mercy, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. Now, children, do you know what God did? He changed his mind. Yes, it happens, and this story proves it. The Lord said, 'I have pardoned according to your word, but truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, because all these men who have seen my glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have put me to the test now these 10 times, and have not heeded my voice, they certainly shall not see the land of which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who rejected me see it.'" Joshua stepped forward. "Now let me tell this part, my brother. God continued to speak to Moses, saying, 'But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it.'" Again the children leaped to their feet, clapping and cheering, but now both Joshua and Caleb held up their hands for silence. "There is so much more we want to tell you," Joshua said, smiling. "Please sit." Caleb spoke again. "Then Moses went up to Mount Nebo, to the top of Pisgah, across from Jericho, and the Lord showed him the land. And the Lord said, 'This is the land of which I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I have caused you to see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there.' Now, children, Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab. He was 120 years old, but his eyes were not dim, nor his vigor diminished. We children of Israel wept for Moses for 30 days. Can you guess whom the Lord chose to be the next leader of the children of Israel?" Many kids shouted, "You!" And others yelled, "Joshua!" "Some of you are right," Caleb said. "Joshua was full of the spirit of wisdom. It came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, Moses' assistant, saying, 'Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over to this Jordan, you and all these people, to the land which I am giving to them. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and to the great sea toward the going down of the sun, shall be your territory. "No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, "Pass through the camp and command the people, saying, 'Prepare provisions for yourselves, for within 3 days you will cross over this Jordan to go in to possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess.'" Joshua told the people, "Remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, 'The Lord your God is giving you rest and is giving you this land. Your wives, your little ones, and your livestock shall remain in the land which Moses gave you on this side of the Jordan. But you shall pass before your brethren armed, all your mighty men of valor, and help them, until the Lord has given your brethren rest as he gave you, and they also have taken possession of the land which the Lord your God is giving them. Then you shall return to the land of your possession and enjoy it, which Moses the Lord's servant gave you on this side of the Jordan toward the sunrise." They answered Joshua, saying, "All that you command us we will do, and wherever you send us we will go. Just as we heeded Moses in all things, so we will heed you. Only the Lord your God be with you, as he was with Moses. Whoever rebels against your command and does not heed your words shall be put to death. Only be strong and of good courage." Joshua sent out 2 men to spy secretly on Jericho. So they went and came to the house of a harlot named Rahab and lodged there. And it was told the king of Jericho, "Behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country." So the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, "Bring out the men who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the country." But the woman took the 2 men and hid them and said, "Yes, they came to me, but I didn't know where they were from. And as the gate was being shut, when it was dark, the men went out. Where they went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them." But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them with the stalks of flax. As soon as those who pursued them had gone out, they shut the gate. Now before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said, "I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the Amorites on the other side of the Jordan, whom you utterly destroyed. Our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you, for the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. Now therefore, I beg you, swear to me by the Lord, since I have shown you kindness, that you also will show kindness to my father's house, and give me a true token, and spare my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death." The men answered, "Our lives for yours, if none of you tell this business of ours. And it shall be, When the Lord has given us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with you. Then she let them down by a rope through the window, and the men said, When we come into the land, bind this line of scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. When they returned, they said to Joshua, Truly the Lord has delivered all the land into our hands, for indeed all the inhabitants of the country are faint-hearted because of us. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and they set out from the acacia grove and came to the Jordan, he and all the children of Israel, and lodged there before they crossed over. So it was after 3 days that the officers went through the camp, and they commanded the people, saying, When you see the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests, the Levites, bearing it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you must go, for you have not passed this way before. Then Joshua said to the priests, Take up the ark of the covenant and cross over before the people. And the Lord said to Joshua, This day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. Command the priests who bear the ark of the covenant. When you have come to the edge of the water, you shall stand in the Jordan. So Joshua said to the children of Israel, By this you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you all your enemies. Behold, the ark of the covenant of the Lord of all the earth is crossing over before you into the Jordan. And it shall come to pass, as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests who bear the ark of the Lord of all the earth shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, the waters shall be cut off, and they shall stand as a heap. And, children, so it was. When we set out to cross over the Jordan, and the feet of the priests who bore the ark dipped in the edge of the water, the flow was cut off, and we crossed over, opposite Jericho, on dry ground. The children were cheering again, but Joshua held up a hand for silence. Caleb continued, The Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, Take for yourselves 12 men, one man from every tribe, and command them to take for themselves 12 stones from out of the midst of the Jordan from the place where the priest's feet stood firm. Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant stood, and we hurried and crossed over. About 40,000 prepared for war crossed over before the Lord to the plains of Jericho. You see, on that day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and we feared him as we had Moses. And Joshua commanded the priests, saying, Come up from the Jordan. And when the soles of their feet touched dry land, the waters of the Jordan returned and overflowed all its banks. We came up from the Jordan and camped in Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones we took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up in Gilgal. Then he spoke to the children of Israel, saying, When your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, What are these stones? You shall let your children know, saying, Israel crossed over this Jordan on dry land. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed over, just as he did the Red Sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed over. And, young ones, here is why. Are you listening? So all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that they may fear the Lord their God forever. Will you vow to do that, will you? Raise your hand if you will. All over the athletic field, youngsters raised their hands, and many waved. All right, we're getting to the story you've all been waiting for, and I know you want to hear it from the man himself. More applause as Joshua traded places with Caleb. We had been in the wilderness for more than 40 years by now, and it was time to possess the land. We camped in Gilgal on the plains of Jericho. We ate of the produce of the land, unleavened bread and parched grain. The manna from the Lord ceased the day after we had eaten of the land, and we ate the food of the land of Canaan that year. One day I looked, and behold, a man stood opposite me with his sword drawn. I went to him and said, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" He told me he had come as commander of the army of the Lord. I knew who he was. Do you? He sits on the throne in the temple even today. I fell on my face and worshipped and said, "What does my Lord say to his servant?" The commander of the Lord's army said, "Take your sandal off your foot, for the place where you stand is holy." And so I did. Now the people of the city of Jericho knew we were nearby, and so it was locked up tight, no one going in or coming out. The Lord said, "See, I have given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city, all you men of war, once every day for 6 days, and 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. But the 7th day you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. It shall come to pass, when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, that all the people shall shout with a great shout. Then the wall of the city will fall down flat." I called the priests together and told them what the Lord had told me, and I instructed the people, "Proceed and march around the city, and let him who is armed advance before the ark of the Lord. You shall not shout, nor shall a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I say to you, 'Shout.' Then you shall shout." So I had the ark of the Lord circle the city, going around it once. Then we came into the camp and lodged. And I rose early in the morning, and the 2nd day did the same thing. We did this every day for 6 days, as the Lord had commanded. Well, you know what happened next, so perhaps my friend and I should leave now. The children leaped to their feet, crying, "No, no, stay and tell the rest." Joshua smiled broadly and signaled them to sit and be quiet. "All right, you persuaded me." On the 7th day, we rose about dawn and marched around the city. Only this day we circled it 7 times. On the 7th time around, when the priests blew their trumpets, I said to the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city. The city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction, it and all who are in it. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all who are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. All the silver and gold and vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to the Lord and shall come into his treasury." So when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, they shouted with a great shout, and the wall fell down flat. The children were cheering again. Then we marched straight in and took the city as the Lord had commanded. We utterly destroyed it and everything in it, with the edge of the sword and with fire, protecting only the harlot who had been faithful to the Lord and her family. Caleb stepped forward once again. "So you see, little ones, the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame spread throughout all the country. You too can be blessed of the Lord if you remain strong and have courage, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and remain obedient and faithful." Joshua closed the time with the children by praying, but when he finished, the children pressed forward. They wanted to touch the men to ask more questions. For more than an hour, until Cameron could restore order, kids milled about, leaning in, their faces expectant as they clearly longed for their moment with these heroes. Unlike when Noah had visited, for some reason, very few of the children left with their parents when it was over. Kenny was overwhelmed with kids who had questions and others who wanted to act out the scenes they had just heard. Some asked if they could build stone monuments, and Kenny promised to try to find stones small enough so everyone who wanted to could do it. He was most impressed, however, with children who had deduced that the commander of the Lord's army was Jesus himself. One little boy said, "Mr. Williams, I want to be in Jesus's army." "Oh, don't you realize," Kenny said, "he accepts only those who trust him for forgiveness of their sins and for salvation." "I will."
"You will? How will you do that?"
"I'll tell him."
"Right now?
Can I?"
"Yes, and you don't even have to travel to the temple. Just pray to him and tell him that you know you are a sinner and that you want his forgiveness. Then ask him to be your savior and thank him for dying on the cross for your sins. You know that story, don't you?"
"Sure, everybody knows that. At least everybody here."
"Do you understand that Jesus wants you to decide to follow him?" The little boy nodded, and Kenny prayed with him. He couldn't wait to tell Yekaterina, and he was sure she would have similar stories. Abdullah sat in his cramped new office at the back of the tall headquarters in Amman, reading his Bible and making notes for a lesson he was prepared to give if ever asked. He looked up when he realized Sarsour was peering at him from the other room.
"Need anything?" Abdullah said.
The young man, wiry and nimble, shook his head, but his body language gave him away. He seemed drawn to Abdullah.
"Feel free to come in, anytime, chat, or just sit."
Sarsour wandered in as if he could take or leave the invitation. He pretended to study stuff taped to the walls, but it was all old and faded and likely had been affixed there by him, so Abdullah knew he was just self-conscious. Abdullah went back to his reading, keeping an ear open. He began to hum an old hymn and then softly sing,
"Oh, the love that sought me, oh, the blood that bought me, oh, the grace that brought me to the fold. Wondrous grace that brought me to the fold."
Finally, Sarsour sat. Abdullah slid his Bible and his papers to the side and looked at him expectantly.
"You really believe this stuff, huh?" Sarsour said.
"I do, and you don't?"
"Course I don't. I'm a taller."
"Your parents have to be believers."
"Yeah, but it's not for me. They tried to raise me in it, but as soon as I started reading other stuff and talking to other people, I realized the Bible isn't the only idea."
"What about all the prophecies that have been fulfilled, all the people who have been resurrected, the ones who have already been in heaven?
And what about the fact that Jesus is with us now and sits on the throne judging the nations?" Sarsour shrugged.
"It's like he's head of the occupying army. We're the resistance, that's all. The rebels."
"And you don't feel destined to lose in the end?"
"We're outnumbered. We're the outcasts, the rejects, the dregs. But we won't give up hope until it's all over. And then we'll see who wins."
"Your compatriots, the ones who reach 100, are dying every day."
"I know."
"Do you know of any exceptions?"
"No."
"And that doesn't tell you anything?"
"It just proves God isn't who he says he is."
"How do you figure?"
"He's mean and unloving and unforgiving, violent and judgmental. Disagree and you get killed."
"He's not willing that any should perish, even you, Sarsour."
"Don't start with me."
"How about I tell you my own story? I wasn't always a believer, you know. I was raised in another religion entirely."
Sarsour shrugged again and looked away.
"I don't need to hear it."
Abdullah cocked his head.
"Sometimes I just need to tell it. How about I talk and you listen only if you care to?"
"I already told you I don't need to hear it."
"And I told you I need to tell it. I was married to a beautiful woman and had two precious children.
I was a decorated fighter pilot in the Royal Jordanian Air Force. Sarsour had stood and was moving away as if he couldn't care less, but that last stopped him.
You were?
Yes. I was what some would call a star. I taught, and I was given the best assignments. I considered myself religious because I followed all the tenets of my faith, keeping away from impure things, trying to do right, praying at prescribed times every day. Then something happened to my wife. Abdullah fell silent and Sarsour sat back down.
What? What happened to her?
Oh, you don't want to hear it.
It's okay. If you need to tell it, you can keep going.
Chapter 23. Over the next several days, Kenny vacillated between the thrill of his relationship with Yekaterina, they had both professed their love by now and had begun enjoying brief goodnight kisses, and a dread over what he was going to do about communicating with Ignace and Lothair Jospin. There would soon be no more putting them off. He had an idea, a fun one he thought Yekaterina would love, but also one that might help him find valuable counsel. He wanted to update Bruce Barnes, his parents' old friend, on him and Kat, and see if he was willing to officiate at their wedding someday. But maybe Bruce would be a good advisor, too. Kenny got Bruce's number from his mother and called him in Osaze. Bruce was in the middle of a project, but promised to call him back that evening. Chloe was troubled. She'd thought the phony Yekaterina Risto personnel report had blown over, and frustrated as she was to have never gotten a handle on where it came from, she had been able to put it behind her. And the more she got to know Kat, the happier she was for Kenny. It was clear that relationship had developed into love, and she and Cameron adored Kat. Chloe only hoped Kenny was calling Bruce for the reason she suspected. But that day, her inbox had brought another upsetting note. Unsigned, of course. Cameron had told her she ought to institute a policy that she look first to see if suggestions or complaints were signed and summarily trash them if not. If a person isn't willing to stand by what he says. This note read, Kenneth B. Williams is your culprit in the Risto personnel matter. That made no sense, of course. Ludicrous. And yet Chloe carried the crumpled note around all morning. What was she supposed to do with something like that? Finally, she paged Cameron. It's not urgent, she said, but when you have a moment. It felt weird to Abdullah to be strolling to work every day with a portfolio full of papers and his Bible, setting up shop, as he liked to call it, in the enemy's lair. It violated every boundary of logic he had ever been aware of, and yet God knew. His ways are not our ways, Abdullah reminded himself. Abdullah had the strange feeling that he had somehow captivated Sarsour, and from the looks they both got from Mudawar, it was clear he wasn't happy. Every time Mudawar emerged from his office, it seemed Sarsour was sitting with Abdullah and listening to some tale.
Back to work, bug. Mudawar would bark.
On the other hand, Mudawar himself had actually been consulting Abdullah almost daily. Despite Mudawar's appearance to take out his impatience and frustration on Sarsour, he seemed to treat Abdullah with more and more deference. Gone was the sarcastic tone and the ridicule. Often he would ask earnestly, "If I wrote something like this about God, would believers say I was wrong or unfair? Or would they just be bothered because they don't understand him either?" Abdullah would study the paragraph and at times even feel led to advise Mudawar how to better frame his argument against God. When the fleshy little man would retreat to his office, Abdullah would seek the Lord. "Is this really what you want from me? I feel as if I'm aiding and abetting." But Abdullah felt God compel him to love the man as Jesus would. No argument of man could besmirch the name of the Lord. Down deep, Abdullah had an inkling of what seemed to be changing these men's minds about him. He really was loving them and caring for them and praying for them. Mudaur had a favorite drink, an especially thick, rich, and dark coffee available only from a certain street vendor. Every day he arrived nursing one of those drinks, and every day Abdullah would slip away late in the morning and bring him another. To win over Sarsour while stringing him along daily with snippets of his own story of his raptured wife, Abdullah discovered Sarsour's love for a particular kind of hummus, a mash of chickpeas and sesame seeds flavored with garlic and lemon. When he ducked out for Mudaur's drink, he would also bring back that treat for Sarsour. It was clear the young men didn't know what to make of Abdullah, but they were growing more civil to him every day. On his break, Sarsour glanced at Mudaur's closed door and slid a chair next to Abdullah's desk. "So, you divorced your wife when she became a believer, and you turned against your own faith, drinking and carousing. When she and your children were taken in the rapture, you dug out her old letters. And what did they say?" Abdullah sat back and studied the young man. "Now we are getting very personal." Sarsour threw up his hands. "Oh, I don't mean to pry, but you began this story. I merely want to hear the end of it." "I'll tell you what," Abdullah said. "On Monday, I will bring the most potent of the letters and let you read it." "You know how I feel about garbage like that," Cameron said. "Toss it." "I know, hon," Chloe said, having expected that response. "But we haven't had this kind of mischief, and I don't want it now. Isn't there a way to find out who's doing this?" Cameron sighed. "Before the rapture, I would have blamed it on the wiles of the devil, devising time wasters to keep us from what's important. It's almost worse to know he has nothing to do with it. This is the flesh. Why don't you ask Kenny if he knows of any enemies who might have some motive for getting him into trouble?" "I hate to even show him this." "Then toss it and forget it." But Chloe knew she couldn't.